You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning. It is time to get up with a comeback for the ages. Rock, Chalk, Jayhawk, making history. We've got you covered every which way. Man, is this about to become the most dangerous deep ball duo in the NFL? Why the new look Dolphins could be the surprise of the season. And it's time to talk turkey in LA as this disaster movie finally finishes. Should they fire the leading man before the credits even roll? Answers to all those questions as we get up with you. Starting right now, we are jam-packed today. Take a look. Legler is here to talk basketball. Bartholomew is back from vacation. Jeremy Fowler is breaking stories, and that's not all. We've got plenty more ready to go. We got Tim Hasselbeck, Seth Greenberg. Not a lot of hair on that screen. Let's roll this thing. National championship game last night. Timmy likes. We got Kansas. We got Carolina. The blood was blue in the title game, and the first half belonged to Carolina. Kansas down 15 at the break, but they fought back quick.
First 4 minutes critical when you find yourself in that situation. Great set play to start the half. A lot to McCormick.
And then they're running it the other way in Christian Brown.
Defense leading to offense. The aggressiveness of Kansas there at the start of the half put Carolina back on their heels.
He has a 20-6 run to get it going, and then they would go inside for McCormick.
Inside there with Baycott, and then when Baycott goes out of the game in foul trouble, go right back to McCormick. It's deep post position on Manic, short jump hook.
All right, let's go late in the game now. 15 seconds left. Carolina down three. They got a shot there. They don't get it, but they've got a rebound. They've got another chance, but the possession doesn't go well.
And Puff Johnson comes up short here. Man, he played great off the bench, great production. But turnover right there. Manic thinks it's over, but they're going to get one more shot, Greeny.
Because Harris steps out of bounds for Kansas. Take a look as he's trying to get up the floor and keep from being fouled. He steps out, so Carolina's got it back with 3 seconds left. 4 seconds left. 3 points is the difference. Caleb Love so good during this tournament, but that one comes up just short and like that. Bill Self and Kansas are the national champs. They win it 72-69, the Jayhawks' fourth ever national title. And Self said this one was for the past and the present.
I think in 2020, we would have sold out on winning one whenever it was before 22. So to me, this was partially one for them, too. I don't know how you guys feel. I always thought the 2020 team was better, more equipped to do well in the NCAA tournament. After the way these kids have played the last month, I think this team can play with any team that Kansas has ever put on the floor.
So they do it with the enormous comeback. They were down 16 late in the first half. It's the largest deficit overcome at any point to win a national championship game. According to our win probability, they had less than a 10% chance to win when the second half began. But they overcame that. And so again, with Legler here and Seth Greenberg there, Uncle Seth, no relation. How'd they do it? How did Kansas come from what looked like it maybe a hopeless deficit to get back in this game as quickly as they did?
Greeny, this game was deja vu. No differently than how they did in the Elite Eight against Miami. They did it on the defensive end. I mean, think about the turnovers that they created. Think about the offense side of the defense, their ability to play ahead of the defense, their ability to sit in a stance, get a stop, and then from that stop, get out in transition, play ahead of the defense. In the first half, they were stuck offensively. They were stuck offensively because they kept on taking the ball out of the net because Armando Baycott kept on offensive rebounding and laying it in. 18-2 in second chance points in the first half. In the second half, they got stops. They disrupted the flow of that North Carolina offense, enabled them to get out in transition. And David McCormick. David McCormick, at the end of the game, you just saw those two big plays. The offensive rebound and the putback prior to that jump hook when Baycott went out, huge. But Remy Martin happened. He was huge in the second half. But the guy that no one's going to talk about is Christian Brown. Because when they were really struggling, Bill Self did a great job of going into Christian Brown and posting him. And then he got out in transition. He scored 3 straight baskets to get him back in the game.
Legs, what did you see in that second half? Because the game completely, to Seth's point, it completely turns at the break.
Yeah, and look, at halftime, you can go one of two ways, right? You can start to doubt yourself, lose confidence. They went the exact opposite way. They came out of the locker room, and I just thought, as Seth said, that physically, defensively, they got up into Carolina. They could not get into any sets. They had no space, no freedom of movement. The defense triggered their confidence because they got some easy shots. And once you started to see the momentum shift, that's when you started to see a little bit of doubt in Carolina. His eyes. It's almost like they could see something slipping through their hands they thought they had a grip on. And I know that feeling as a player. It's tough to reverse that. Give Carolina credit. They did stabilize, and then we had a shootout down the stretch. But for me, it came down to this. Kansas had guys absolutely run to the light. They didn't run from it. Brown, he made a great point about him. Remy Martin, how about him off the bench with the three-point shots that he made? And then McCormick was an absolute man in the paint. So those three players, to me, were the three best players on the floor in the second half, and the talent took over for Kansas.
Seth, let's just tell the story of the season. Obviously, you live in this thing every single day, going all the way back to November. This was a genuinely great NCAA tournament, as they generally tend to be. But, I mean, the games were great throughout. The Final Four was epic. And then last night, how do we tell the story of Kansas winning the national championship this year?
This is a reflection of the season. You think about this season. We never had a consensus number one. We had teams that faced obstacles. Think about Kansas against Kentucky at home, absolutely getting run. But you know what? Sometimes adversity reveals character. Bill Self said that game actually was the turning point for their season. So this was an incredible season for college basketball, whether it was the Gonzaga run. It wasn't one team that separated themselves. But if you look at the season as a whole, look, we had 75,000 people back in watching the championship game. We had fans in the stands. We had, you know, you think about until you lose something, you don't know how much you really appreciate it. Like, we lost college basketball for 2 years. We lost people in the stands. We lost the celebration of the Final Four. 2020, we didn't have it. 2021, we had it with no fans in the stands. It was a sterile season with a great champion and a great championship game in Baylor, obviously, and Gonzaga. But this year, we got a chance to celebrate college basketball once again.
Yeah, and it was. It was extraordinary to watch. And the thing about the NCAA tournament is the best team doesn't always have to be the one that cuts down the nets. And you heard Bill Self say there, just very quickly, he thinks the team he had 2 years ago was better. Is that right? Did he have a better team 2 years ago that didn't get a chance to play for the championship?
He did. They had the immovable object known as Udoka Azubuike. I mean, like, that dude was – you had no matchup for that dude now. All right, like, that dude was a mountain masquerading as a man on steroids. They had a terrific team that could defend you, and Bill Self obviously does a great job of getting the ball inside. So that team in 2020 was a special team. And this team here won a championship. So they're going to be immortalized. But if you look at the breakdown, there's one first-round draft choice on this team. That's it. There are three-star and four-star players that became a great team in Bill Self fashion.
That might be what college basketball looks a little more like going forward. Seth, stay close. We'll do much more. Legs, stick around. We'll get to the NBA with you in a moment. But I want to get to the NFL next because there was action yesterday. Four teams started their offseason programs yesterday, and among them, the Miami Dolphins, whose quarterback Tua Tagovailoa is entering a critical year three in the program. And the Dolphins, of course, brought him some help. They traded for Tyreek Hill last month, made him the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. And as the football squad makes its way over here, Jeremy Fowler, I will start with you. What is the talk that you were hearing around the sport about Tua? And we've had some interesting conversations on this show over the course of the last week or so since this deal was made.
Yeah, Greeny, I'm hearing that the Dolphins don't want to unseat Tua. They want to embolden him. They want to give him weapons to really maximize his skill set. There's a lot of curiosity around the league about how that's going to go because the past coaching staff, it seemed, didn't always feel that way. There was some hesitation about calling deep ball plays for him, for whatever limitations they felt like he might have had. Well, this staff, it's not just going to be dink and duck. They're going to look to stretch the field with Tua. And the curiosity around the league comes from, like, what can this guy really do now that he's healthy? He's had injuries in the past. He's got a full arsenal. Let's see it.
Can he do it? Tim Hasselbeck, let me go to my quarterback on this for a quick read, if you will, and we'll do those a little later in the show. Is he... They've put a lot around him. They've put a lot into this, and they're going for it this year. It's certainly the way it feels on that offense. Is he up to it?
I believe that he is, Greeny. I think we've kind of prematurely judged Tua. Remember, first season was a COVID year where he's coming off the hip injury. Then there was a change in coordinators. There's some dysfunction there in Miami. And so on a team that was the worst in the NFL at pass protecting, it's hard for anybody to succeed. I think he's going to get a much different environment. You know, Jeremy used the word emboldened. I think there'll be a more aggressive offense and an offense that is designed around things that he does really well, and then now the talent around him being better, I think helps him also. So I think we're going to see a much better Tua in 2022.
What do you expect, Bart? They bring in Tyreek Hill. That's the kind of move you make when you say we're ready to go to another level here. Do they have the quarterback to do it?
That remains to be seen, and that's the big question, right? Because I think this cost the last regime their opportunity, their job. I think it was a disconnect between Flores and the upper office and the belief, because we knew that Flores was linked to Deshaun Watson. And listen, we knew that Tua had all the talent. We saw him as a freshman come in with the poise, being able to win the national championship. But it's his availability and his durability. And it's ironic that they bring in Teddy Bridgewater, somebody else who suffered with injuries, and somebody that has the same label that Tua has, which is death by a thousand paper cuts, a guy that won't push the ball down the football field. Now, can he evolve to that? He should be able to, but understanding this McDaniels offense, he shouldn't be forced to, because we look at what they like to do. They like to take advantage of the horizontal, you know, West Coast type of offense, running the football. He's out of excuses. They went out and they got Armstead. They went out and got Connor Williams. The whole protection debate is over with. They went and got him weapons. Now he has to utilize that, but now he has become a leader, and now he has to deal with the expectations, because they've won the offseason. Now they have to win in the regular season. That doesn't always translate.
But, and so that becomes make or break time, right? I mean,
it's make or break.
You used to say this about Baker Mayfield all the time. He's got everything around him to win. There are no excuses, and I feel like that's the setup right now in Miami, Bart.
Absolutely, and you think about the fact that he's such a young quarterback. This allows them to go out and get these luxury pieces to make Tyreek Hill the highest-paid non-quarterback in the league, and now he has to put up or shut up, or they're going to have to really start thinking about a contingency plan and may have to move on from after this year and not pick up his options.
I would say 2 years ago, there were some people around the league that saw some shades of Russell Wilson in Tua. Like, it's not that far from people seeing him as a major talent.
Yeah.
It just hasn't shown up. And so the Dolphins hope for that.
I'm old enough to remember when people were tanking for Tua, right? I mean, that's not, it's not that long ago, and now all of a sudden we're giving up. We'll see. Life comes at you fast in the National Football League. If you don't believe me, ask Daniel Jones. He's coming up next. You don't have to tell him so far that things haven't been great. The organization is making excuses. You'll hear what he says about trying to change the narrative as we continue. Plus, we all know how disappointing the season has been for LeBron's Lakers. How one decision made months ago may very well have ruined the entire year. You'll hear what it was as we roll on. This is Get Up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and Jeremy Fowler, let's run the hurry up. A lot of wide receiver news out there. What's going on with DK Metcalf?
Greeny, let's do it. Metcalf is a name that people around the league are checking for, because I've talked to a few executives who believe that he could be traded at the right price, that Seattle might do that. But the Seahawks are also giving the indication publicly and privately that they don't want to deal him, that they see him as a building block. And this will likely come down to, as it always does, the money. The receiver market has ballooned to $20-plus million a year. He's a year away from free agency. Will Seattle pay him? Teams are waiting to see. And then you have Brandon Cooks. This is kind of a wild card in the receiver market as teams still look for a trade target. I've heard that multiple teams have inquired about Cooks. He's due $12.5 million in salary, which is pretty reasonable right now. He's still a vertical threat. You know, get teams like the Packers, Chiefs, they could still need that a little bit. Could look into it. Watch for the Browns as well, because Deshaun Watson and that connection with him in Houston. All right, let's switch it up. We got OBJ. This one's interesting. I heard the Patriots were involved a little bit with Beckham. Exploratory talks early in free agency. The issue is he's not going to be ready until October or November, coming off that torn ACL. So that has given some teams pause, but you got to remember, the Chiefs and the Packers were both in on him back in November when he was released by the Browns. He will have a market if a team is willing to be patient, could get a steal, and of course the Rams are still involved.
It's going to be
a
fascinating one to watch. We'll see what happens with all these receivers, and of course OBJ had some of his best years playing for the New York Giants, who have struggled since his departure, and the quarterback Daniel Jones is entering year four in the NFL, and he'll be playing for his third different coach, but he's not making excuses for the way things haven't gone thus far. Here's what he had to say yesterday about his mindset.
My focus is on preparing myself, and I take you know, full responsibility for how I've played. And we haven't won enough games. We haven't scored enough points. We haven't done things well enough. So, I take responsibility for that as a quarterback. You play, a big role in those things.
Let's make clear. I want to give him credit. He was responding to questions about the owner basically saying, we've done everything we can to screw him up. So he was taking responsibility for his struggles unto himself, which is the right thing for him to do. That said, Tim Hasselbeck, my quarterback today, is Daniel Jones ready to take that next step? And is this a team he can take it with?
I don't believe it is, Greeny. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of talk about Brian Daboll coming over and look what he did with Josh Allen. And, you know, I don't think they're similar players. I don't think there are many characteristics that are similar. You know, and I think the challenge for Daniel Jones is he talks about, you know, some of the struggles they've had on offense is he essentially turned the football over as many times as he was able to help them account for a touchdown. You know, 50 touchdowns, 49 turnovers. You cannot win games doing that. He's fumbled the ball in 3 years 36 times. And so, you know, when you look at decisions as a passer, those are important, but protecting the ball when you're in conflict is also something that you need to work on. It's hard to fix. And I think it's one of the reasons why, you know, we'll probably continue to see him struggle. And ultimately, I think the Giants a year from now are going to be in a situation where they're looking for a quarterback.
What do you think, Bart?
I mean, listen, we all say that, you know, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. But in this instance, I think they do. When you think about Daniel Jones and the circumstances and the conditions in which he has to play for, I mean, Dave Gettleman should be arrested for what he's done, you know, to this organization. Only $7 million left. He spent this money badly. Talk about Saquon Barkley not living up. He told him he was going to be a yellow jacket. He leaves him only $7 million of space. He overpaid Leonard Williams. You know, James Bradbury, he's a contender maybe to be traded. I think he's been in some of the worst situations, and finally they have the draft equity to be able to build around him and protect him. Of course you're going to be able to birth the baby if you got guys that can't get separation. You got guys like Galladay that came in and disappointed, supposed to be a great number one receiver. He hasn't had the protection, and he hasn't had his number one weapon, which is supposed to be Saquon Barkley. I think he is very similar to Josh Allen. I think he's a very athletic quarterback. I think Jason Garrett had a great job with him with the RPOs. We saw that he can get to top speed. He can deliver the ball down the field, but he just has to limit the turnovers. But that's about being able to have protection.
That's a fascinating take. It's similar. It reminds me of the conversations we were having about Sam Darnold a year ago or so, about whether it was the situation he was in, or and maybe sometimes those habits get so ingrained. What do you think, Jeremy Fowler? What is the expectation for what the Giants look like around him right now?
The projection is more pain, right? Because new GM Joe Shane, he's just trying to get them in a salary cap situation that's healthy, right? Yeah. Like, they're stripping salary, they're restructuring contracts, could make some trades. So this isn't a team that's loading up right now in 2022. They do have a few pieces on offense. Offensive line should be better. I think the Giants are just thinking, hey, can you show us something as far as progress to be an option in the future? If not, they paid $6+ million to Tyrod Taylor to play this year. Mm-hmm. He could step in and be productive.
Yeah, again, Jones is going into that fourth year. There's always the fifth year with that rookie quarterback who gets drafted in the first round. So it's not necessarily now or never, but it sort of does feel that way. And Brian Daboll is taking over a Giants offense that was second worst in both yards per game and points per game in 2021. He will look to carry over the success he had in Buffalo, who ranked in the top five in those categories the last 2 years when Daboll was their offensive coordinator. So you know that every April 15th is a special day in baseball, but this year it is the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson shattering the color barrier and setting the stage for momentous change in our society. Robinson endured relentless abuse, but he always turned the other cheek, honoring an agreement that he made with Brooklyn Dodgers president Branch Rickey. Today, a hip-hop legend shares the impact that he feels from the pain, perseverance, and power of Robinson's life. It is part of Black History Always.
Baseball was almost like the Black family male heirloom. You're talking about, I sit at the right knee of my father, who grew up Harlemite, you know, grew up Jackie Robinson's the first hero. The message of Jackie's life is he sacrificed. Jackie sacrificed so much biting that lip, turning the other cheek in that first year, that I think it affected and it aged him the rest of his life. one of the biggest stories that I felt in the following and reading Jackie's life was that year that Branch Rickey said, yo, you feel what you gotta feel, be you. And that's the Jackie Robinson that not only infiltrated the business world as a person that worked as an executive for Chock Full of Nuts up in Harlem, writing for New York Post, but he was also found on the corners dialoguing and debating with people, you know, on hot topics. He just did not let that intensity go after that. And I took that intensity, what I felt that he let out, and I said, that's gonna be just that whole boil that I'm gonna deal with in writing songs, performing on stage. It's really an intangible you can't talk about. It's something that you feel. Yeah, I got so much trouble on my mind, I refuse to lose. That's coming at you spikes up. I adopted it, built some stuff around it, and became the first line in my song, Welcome to the Terror Dome. I think that epitomizes Jackie Robinson. I got so much trouble on my mind, I refuse to lose. Jackie was totally revolutionary, and an evolution follows. The revolutionary's got to go through the trials, tribulations, the pains, getting slapped up, smacked down. But my intensity comes from understanding that no matter what is in your way, understand what's behind you, you must honor the pain.
Chuck D and Public Enemy were at the forefront of positioning the art of hip-hop as an instrument of political and social activism. In his words, a voice of the voiceless. Join us again tomorrow as we count down to April 15th with another firsthand reflection in our series, Jackie to Me. In the meantime, as we continue on Get Up This Morning, LeBron and the Lakers have been the NBA's biggest disappointment this season. One L.A. legend is pointing the finger of blame, and you will hear at whom next.
Delicious, meat nutritious, in the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Back on Get Up, and if you're just joining us, it was an unbelievable finish to what was a great NCAA tournament last night. Bill Self and Kansas trailing Carolina by 15 at the break, but in the second half, they just came out fast. David McCormick was unstoppable inside. They went on a 20-6 run to start the second half, and then it was McCormick with big buckets late, and then Kansas would have a 3-point lead in the final 4 seconds. Caleb Love would have an opportunity to tie it here, but no good, and Kansas holds on to win it. Their fourth national championship in school history, 72-69, the final score. And my uncle Seth Greenberg, no relation, with us all morning long. And we talked about the game specifically earlier this morning. Seth, I want to talk a little bit about the bigger picture. future. The guys on KJM Radio asked me this question this morning, and I will ask it to you. With Coach K now stepping into retirement, he has been the face of the sport and the preeminent person in the sport for so long. With that second championship last night, does Bill Self position himself as the person to step into that space?
If you look at just wins and losses, Greeny, yes. I mean, Hembo just sent me this great stat. It's absolutely unbelievable. Since he became head coach at Kansas, he's the winningest coach in all of college basketball. He's never been lower than a four seed. A four seed. Having said that, I think there are a number of faces. I don't think he separates himself. Obviously, the second championship separates him. All right, that's in rare air. But again, they still have this NCAA thing that's hanging over their head, so I'm not sure where that stands. None of these players were involved in that, so I mean, that has nothing to do with it, but it still has to be, you know, rectified. But I look at college basketball today, I said Bill Self's probably in that conversation. Jay Wright is in that conversation. I think, don't forget about John Calipari. He's not going anywhere. He's still at Kentucky. Kentucky will always be in that conversation. And then a guy like Hubert Davis, I think he's going to emerge as a voice of college basketball. The manner in which he carries himself, his voice is going to be heard. You can see his ability to connect with players. You can see how he conducts himself and carries himself. North Carolina and Hubert Davis will always be in the conversation. But right now in this moment in time, Bill Self has separated himself as a coach. The success he's had with different teams, changing style of play, agility, as a coach, winningest coach since he's become head coach at Kansas, never been lower than a four seed. That's absolutely incredible.
And so how'd they do it last night? For those who maybe didn't stay up late and watch the game and all of that, it's a team that hits you with a lot of runs, right? They were losing to Miami in the Elite Eight. They just blew the doors off of Villanova at the very beginning of that game, and then they did it at the beginning of the second half last night. What is it about this team that they were able to put together those spurts that really decided these games?
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
They got to the next play in the second half. They dominated the second half. They dominated the second half against Miami in the Elite Eight, and they dominated the second half last night against North Carolina on the defensive end. This is a team that could get stuck offensively. When you get stuck offensively, how do you turn it around? You get stops, you get out of transition, you play ahead of the defense. And then at the end of the game, a couple things happened. David McCormick happened. They played through David McCormick. That offensive rebound he had at the end of the game was absolutely huge. But that would have been insignificant if they didn't come out in the first 10 minutes of that second half, get stops, create turnovers, get out in transition, and play ahead of the defense. Because in the half court, they really got stuck. Bill Self's message at halftime was basically, look in the mirror, we've got to make a stand, and it's got to start on the defensive end. You can't get back in a game unless you get stops. And they got stops and turnovers and baskets.
It was a great NCAA tournament in the last two games. Duke, Carolina on Saturday night, and then this one last night. Absolutely fabulous. We'll do a little more a little later. Seth, stay close by, if you would. But I want to go to the NBA next, because we are 1 week away from the start of the play-in tournament, and here's where it stands. The Hornets, the Nets, and the Clippers are already locked in to play in the play-in. If Brooklyn stays the 10 seed, bear in mind the Nets would need to win two road games just to make the playoffs. So while we might give them the ultimate puncher's chance, they're going to need to punch their way into the dance. Tim Legler is with us here today. As you look at the teams that are likely to be in this play-in tournament, which one right now would you handpick to say will make the deepest playoff run?
There's only one team, really, and I think they're the only team that even has a shot of winning a series if they get out of the play-in, and that's the Nets. There's no question about it because of the firepower of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You've got two players that on any given night can be the best player on the floor. So you're talking about penciling in on a bad night, probably close to 60 points between the two of them. If they both get hot on the same night, that's almost 80 probably. So, yes, clearly those two guys can do that to a defense and potentially win you a series, although I don't necessarily think they're a title threat. They're the only one of the eight teams that are in the play-in that actually can really put fear into those top seeds.
Yeah, you said they have a puncher's chance, and I think there's never been a fighter with a punch quite like that, right?
Right.
I mean, that's awfully dangerous. Now, with apologies to our buddy Graziano, who usually gets to do Overreaction Tuesday, we're going to do an NBA version of Overreaction Tuesday. Timmy Legler, if I were to say Giannis has already won the MVP, would that be an overreaction?
Overreaction! He's not going to win the MVP, and he has made a great push here in the second half. I think Luka Doncic also deserves some MVP consideration, but right now, I think it's a two-man race between Jokic and Embiid, and I think Jokic feels like he's got the momentum to win the award. It will be tight. I don't know what more Joel Embiid can possibly do, but It feels like the momentum now is in the corner of Jokic, but I don't think Giannis is going to win another one.
Okay, that's interesting. He had a huge week last week. We will see. How about the next overreaction? If I were to say, or someone were to say, because I wouldn't, the Nets have no chance to win the championship if they get nothing from Ben Simmons. Would that be an overreaction?
It would be an overreaction because of the word no. Like, no chance with Kevin Durant on your roster?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can ever say no chance if Kevin Durant is suiting up and he's healthy and he looks as good as he has looked here for the last month since he came back from the injury. So you don't want to rule it out completely. And also, listen, there are teams at the top of the East that've got some issues right now. Sixers aren't playing great. Boston lost Robert Williams. I think Miami's been a little bit up and down this year. And Milwaukee, to me, is the most consistent team. But I don't think any of those teams are on that unbeatable level. So, yeah, for Brooklyn, you don't say no shot if you got KD and Kyrie.
All right, and the third overreaction, I'm going to yield to one of the greatest players of all time. Yesterday, Magic Johnson was here on our show on Get Up, and he revealed something about the Lakers and DeMar DeRozan that certainly got a lot of attention all across the landscape. Here's what Magic said.
The blame that he's got to take is the fact that DeRozan ended up in Chicago and not with the Lakers. You know, he has
expand to, on that thought if you
well,
will. Why
because
is that on
DeRozan
LeBron?
Wanted to play for the Lakers, and when I got the call from his agent, I called the Lakers, said, hey, he wants to come home. And DeRozan could have been a Laker instead of a Bull. We could have made that deal. But when Russell and LeBron and them started talking, that's when they nixed that deal and went with Westbrook, and he became a Laker instead of DeRozan.
And so when you hear me say, could you expand on that? That was my way of saying, wait a minute, what? So he said this team would have been a title contender with DeMar DeRozan. Is that an overreaction?
I think it is an overreaction from this standpoint, because by saying that, you're basically implicating Russell Westbrook and saying that fit was the main thing that derailed their season, and that's just not the case. It was the injuries, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, the aging supporting cast that they added that really didn't put a lot of relevance in the regular season. So there were a ton of factors outside of that decision. Now, they would have been better, and clearly DeRozan would have been a better fit with that group. But when you look at all those other issues and factors, Lakers probably wouldn't be eliminated from the play-in. We wouldn't be talking about that. But I do not think we'd be looking at them at the same level as Golden State, Memphis, or Phoenix.
And so the Lakers' season is going to come, I know I speak for everyone when I say, to a merciful end this week. It seems almost impossible to imagine make it into the play-in. And so I guess the question is, for the future, if they're going to try and put a championship team around LeBron James at this point, will that team include the fellow on the right there, Anthony Davis, or will they have to trade him for the pieces they will need to win a title?
They may entertain it. I mean, but here's the thing. It's mind-boggling to think Anthony Davis has 85 DNPs in 3 years, 28 on average per year.
Mm-hmm.
That has them second-guessing if he's going to be the right guy. But here's what ends up happening. You get into the offseason, Anthony Davis finishes the season healthy, and immediately your mind starts to wander if you're the Lakers about what could be if Anthony Davis stays healthy. You feel like we say it about him all the time, but that ultimately is what they're going to buy into. LeBron and AD together won a championship. If you assume health next year and the year that LeBron just had, you think we could do it again. Russell Westbrook isn't going anywhere. He's going to not opt out of $47 million. Very difficult to move that. So really what it comes down to is players 4 through 15, complete makeover. Younger, more athletic, tougher, better defenders.
That sounds easy. it's easy to say. It's obviously a lot harder to do in a conference where there are a lot of really good young teams. All right, I told you we're 1 week from the play-in. So, Tim, let's look 1 week into the future. 1 week from today, what will the Lakers be doing?
They'll either be on vacation or, more aptly, I think, purifying themselves in the waters of Lake Minnetonka. Because if you think about it, that's where, like, the franchise originated in Minneapolis. It would make sense. They take a team trip and they purify themselves after the year that they just had in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
That's
what
Purple
could be
Rain,
better
right?
than that? Exactly right. A Purple Rain reference. The late great Prince, one of my favorites of all time, right? And that, to me, is where the Lakers should be in a week.
Okay, they'll be purifying themselves in the waters of Lake Minnetonka. How about the Nets? Where will they be in a week?
They will be trying to become the first team, because of this new play-in format, to come from the 9 or 10 spot and win a championship. And they believe, we talk about a puncher's chance, you're right. I mean, this is like ding, ding, Mike Tyson running across the ring and throwing a haymaker to try to take your head off. That's the firepower that they have. I just think their defense ultimately will derail them. But, man, has there ever been a more interesting team coming from deep, buried, to try to win a championship than the Nets?
Definitely not. Finally, in a week, where will the Sixers be?
Nervously preparing for their first-round opponent. I think it could end up being Toronto, and there could be some issues there, because we still don't know if everybody on the Sixers is vaccinated. That's an interesting subplot. But right now, they're just not quite there. I think they don't feel like they're on solid footing heading in. Obviously, Embiid is. Their bench is thin, and James Harden right now is not playing well as they hit the most important time of the season.
So he's not as thin as the bench?
That's correct.
All right, we have much more from Legs as we continue. And we will be back here tonight with great basketball action. We've got a marquee matchup between Giannis and the Bucks, and the Mar DeRozan and the Bulls. The game is 8 Eastern tonight. We'll have a 1 hour countdown to kick it off. So we'll be with you 7 Eastern tonight for NBA countdown into a really good game right here on ESPN. Meanwhile, coming up, we had a sneaky big trade in the NFL. Could affect a pair of quarterbacks. We'll tell you why it could be that rare win-win as we roll on. Get up on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
We are back on Get Up with sneaky big news coming from the NFL yesterday, and that was a trade and a bunch of moves in this one transaction. The Eagles trading 2 of their 3 first round picks this year to the Saints, who will now have 2 first-round selections in both this year's and next year's draft. There are now 8 teams with multiple first-round picks in the 2022 draft. So we take a close look at that. And it's fascinating from both sides. And let me bring the general manager of my team, and that's Mike Tannenbaum, into the conversation along with the rest of our football crew to interpret it. What do we take away from this trade primarily, Mike T?
Well, it's interesting from both sides. The Saints, unless there's another move, they are all in on Jameis Winston, who, let's remember, was 5-2 last year and played good football. But they have really no meaningful way to improve their quarterback position next year without a first-round pick. And strategically, I think what the Saints did is they leapfrogged the Chargers and said, hey, we got to get a tackle to replace Taron Armstead. On the other side, here's what I find fascinating, Greeny. The Philadelphia Eagles now have 2 first-round picks next year, but so do 4 other teams: Seattle, Detroit, Houston, and Miami. So we have 5 teams today that in the 2023 draft have 2 first-round picks. All 5 of those teams could need quarterbacks, and next year's draft is loaded with quarterbacks.
Yes, much better than this year's draft as far as the quarterback situation is concerned. Bryce Young being at the top of that list if he winds up coming out that year. So, Jeremy, what do you hear from people about this deal? What's the most important thing fans need to know about this deal from the calls you were making?
Well, I checked in with some people around the league. The sense is it's not necessarily a quarterback-only move for the Eagles. They're just getting good value. You got to remember, the Saints aren't necessarily going to get the 32nd pick in the first round. Like, they might not be a great team. They might get a good pick in the middle of the first round. So they're banking on value, and it's overall a stronger quarterback draft next year, stronger overall draft. So the Eagles are just looking to maximize their value here. The Saints are considered a sleeper team for maybe a developmental quarterback, if not in the first round, then somewhere in the first few rounds this year. I know some quarterbacks that are in the mix atop this draft, at least consider the Saints an option at that point.
That's interesting. Bart, what's the number one takeaway you have from a big trade in the NFL yesterday?
Jalen Hurts, they're just not that into you. Oh. And it's like one of those things, if I'm him, I will be renting, I will not be buying a home. Because this is a move that's saying, hey, if you can't win this year after going to the playoffs, we have a team that has talent around. We don't believe, or we're not sold that you are our future quarterback. You're our present quarterback, but we're not sold that you're our future quarterback. That's what this move is for, so that they can have the draft equity, if needed, to move up and make a big move. That way this team can not really miss a big, you know, big step in being able to be a contender, you know, consistently.
That's interesting. And the Jalen Hurts of it all fascinates me. How about you, Tim? Yeah. As you look at this, there's so many tentacles to this. What's the most important thing to you?
Well, my first reaction was definitely that of Jalen Hurts. It gives Philadelphia a year to evaluate him and then protect them next year if they want to, you know, have an upgrade at the position. But I see this exactly the way Mike sees it in terms of how interesting it is on both sides. Because Jameis Winston, guys, he's just 28 years old. He's been in the league for 7 years, and he's shown plenty of promise. Now, it hasn't been perfect, but I think part of it is he had the experience playing. Then he got to watch Drew Brees. He's been well coached in New Orleans. He had success last year. You know, coming off an ACL injury shouldn't be a big factor for his type of game. And so building around him for a guy that, you know, has had a season where he threw for 5,000 yards in his, you know, south of 30, I think that New Orleans, you know, is probably looking at this the right way with Jameis.
All right, stay close by, guys. Much more on this as we go. I got Curtis Strange is standing by, but we will come back to this because this trade, I think, is a big deal. But there is no bigger deal this week, of course, than the status of Tiger Woods at Augusta National. Now, you know the situation with him. He hasn't played in a PGA Tour event in more than 17 months, but he was out on the course yesterday at Augusta National in preparation for the Masters, and I wanted to show you this picture of him walking there. Maybe you see the slight limp. He played 9 holes yesterday with Justin Thomas and Fred Couples, and he has called it a game-time decision as to whether or not he is going to go in round one. On Thursday, I want to bring Curtis Strange in live from Augusta National. Curtis, from what you see, and you will see things that most of the rest of us cannot, what did you see in Tiger in the way he was hitting balls yesterday, and maybe more importantly, the way he was moving?
I think more importantly, the way he was moving, he looked like he was moving very nicely. He, you know, he looks a little stiff-legged, but I think that's, you know, okay. I just think it's wonderful he's been here, Greeny. He's put in a lot of preparation. He's here to stay. He's hitting the ball nicely. Remember, it's the leg and also the lower back, but he's hit a lot of balls recently. He's prepared a lot. Just by being here, he has absolutely stolen the show here this week. Yesterday, playing 9 holes late, it was like Sunday afternoon at Augusta. There was thousands of people out there watching this guy.
Is your sense that he's going to play? Like, I'm not asking you to guess here. What is your sense based on what you've seen and what you've heard? And Tiger will meet the media today at 11 a.m. Eastern, and we'll carry that live here on ESPN. What is your sense of his plan?
Absolutely. I think 100% right now he intends to play, unless there's a setback, unless the rain really affects his ability to walk or affects his lower back. And this is the toughest walk. Let's remember, this is the toughest walk on tour all year long. When you put 2 inches of rain on top of it, it becomes even tougher. It's soggier. But right now he certainly intends to play, because he wouldn't be here going through this, preparing like this, if he didn't intend to play.
Now, the sense that I got from it as well, Curtis, or just my observation is, I don't think he plays this weekend because he knows he can walk 72 holes. I think he plays if he believes he has a chance to contend and win. I don't think Tiger's there just to show he can play. I think he's there if he believes he has a chance to win. So if he tees it up Thursday, my sense is it's because he thinks he has a real shot to be there Sunday.
Well, I think Winning is would be a big ask, but I think he intends to play well. And if everything goes his way, if he gains momentum and starts making a few putts, let's not forget he hasn't played in a competitive round of golf in a long, long time. So the competitive edge might not be just there yet, but we know not to second guess this guy over the years. But if momentum builds, if he starts making some putts, the people get behind him, he feels their energy, yes, he could be somewhere late there on the weekend.
Yeah, and he feels the energy, and everyone around him, as we saw in 2019, feels that energy as well. And sometimes that impacts other players. I want you to also analyze one piece of video for me here, okay, Curtis? We're going to call this Get Your Eyes Checked, which is brought to you by America's Best Contacts and Eyeglasses. Curtis, I want you just to see this guy, all right? This is a brave man. He just keeps closing the door and hitting balls through it. Do you have the courage to do this? Because that strikes me as a very dangerous little activity there.
Well, I hate to admit it, but we've hit plenty of balls out of windows over the years on tour, so maybe that's the same thing. But this guy, you know, I like his swing, but it better be damn good because it's a small area in which he's trying to hit it through. Look at this. That's phenomenal stuff.
Yeah. One more.
My question to you is how many times did he miss?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they do focus in on some of the dings in the door there. But I'll take it. If that guy's willing to do it, I will take it. Curtis, we'll see you as the week goes on. Enjoy. Thank you very much. We'll check in again. Augusta this year, and it begins after a two-year absence with the par 3 contest. That, of course, is tomorrow. It's a wonderful family event and always so much fun to watch. You can see it tomorrow, 3 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. So you can take it in whether you're at work or anywhere else you may be. And again, we'll hear from Tiger later this morning. Okay, as we continue, down big at the half, no big deal. How the Kansas Jayhawks pulled off the biggest comeback in the history of the championship game. That is next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.